This episode of The Tour Life is also brought to you by Optimize Touring. If you're interested in learning how you can bring health and wellness on tour with you, whether it's a small van tour or a huge arena tour, go to optimizetouring.com to learn more. Welcome to The Tour Life podcast from Well Better Best. I'm Janine, your host, integrative nutrition health coach and personal trainer. In the past 10 years, I've had the privilege of meeting some of the most interesting and hardworking professionals in the music industry. Whether you are a fan of live music or someone who actually puts on the shows, you'll find some great stories, advice, and encouragement to live a happier, healthier life doing what you love. Today's guest is a tour director who has worked with artists such as Childish Gambino, Run the Jewels, A$AP Rocky, Claro, Zara Larsson, Mike Snow, Summer Walker, and Black. In this episode, we talk about finding balance in life, learning to say no, how the coronavirus pandemic has hit the people of the touring industry, how it affects the entire world economy, and how you can help hashtag Save Our Stages by going to saveourstages.com to contact your representatives in support of the Restart Act. Here is my conversation with the truly insightful and caring Christian Coffey. Hey, Christian, thank you so much for joining me on the Tour Life podcast. We're new Facebook friends. I just started using Facebook recently, and now I'm saying Facebook. But we're new Instagram friends. How are you?
You know, I'm doing all right. Quarantine's been interesting.
Oh my gosh. So do you want to tell me what you were up to when, you know, back in March when this happened?
You know, we were getting, Run the Jewels was getting ready to go out on a tour for the entire year. They were going out with Rage Against the Machine for the entire year. A couple other artists I work with had, you know, one-offs, a few festival plays, a couple different things, and some things happening later in the year. But kind of while all this was going on, it was really Run the Jewels was really building their stuff up. Their album was about to come out. The tour was about to happen. We were literally in rehearsals where the guys were working through kind of, you know, really figuring out and working on the album and a way to perform it live. As things started coming down, we were in those rehearsals when Coachella officially got canceled or got postponed. And then I actually had flown out to Pennsylvania with a couple of the crew members, and we were doing lighting programming and designing when everything kind of officially got pushed. So we still wrapped up some of the lighting design and programming because it was going to need to be done, whether the tour happened that week or in, you know, a year. As long as nothing changes substantially, it had to be done. So we just kind of went through it just to, at the same time, keep the crew kind of working as much as we could at the time, give them a little bit of money at the same time, at the same point. And then flew home kind of, I think it was on March 16th or 17th, one of the two, flew home and have kind of been back in LA ever since. Haven't flown anywhere else. I think this is the longest in at least the past 6 years that I've gone without, you know, going somewhere else. So it's been a little bit of a transition.
Wow. I mean, my main question is, how did it feel to kind of see what was going on? Were you kind of in the loop a little bit about what was happening in China prior to hearing this news?
We're definitely aware of it. And I think there was a level of, you know, we're realists out there, but at the same time, there was a certain level of optimism about like, all right, let's just kind of keep pushing forward. It's kind of until it actually happens, just keep working as if it's not, you know, not being ignorant to that, paying attention to everything that is going on around it. But at the same time, like, there's not really a let's stop and wait for 2 or 3 months and see what happens. I would say, I think it was in the midst of, it was right after some LA rehearsals around the Jewels when I was flying to Pennsylvania that we knew stuff was already coming down, and A$AP Rocky was supposed to have a festival performance in Singapore in April. So with that, we were like, this is really close. This is really happening. And that was something in which we were like, okay, this is really starting to come down at this point. And that got postponed. So paying attention to it, yes. But at the same time, it was kind of a let's, you know, keep working as long as we can. Let's see what it is. There's a feeling that something's going to happen. What is it that's going to happen? Is how's this going to affect certain areas? And then, you know, kind of, I would say within, you know, a matter of 4 to 5 days to a week in kind of early March is when it kind of really took hold that, okay, cool. This is at least at minimum done through the spring, and then, you know, kind of reassess it as far as where that goes.
Yeah. And it definitely makes me wonder, have you ever experienced something similar to this where you were staring at something where your life would change, because you said you hadn't really been not traveling for a while now, right?
Yeah. I mean, in terms of, you know, facing something at this level, like a quarantine or something that's going to shut stuff down. No, I mean, I don't think any of us have been through this, even, you know, for the guys that are a little bit older and, you know, dealt with this post 9/11 or even post like the economic crash. Like they've even said like, yes, those changed things for sure. And they definitely made an effect, but it wasn't necessarily overnight, especially when it comes to like the economic crash in the late 2008 or so. It was, you had tickets on sale and suddenly things weren't selling. And, you know, the market was kind of crashing as far as that went. But it wasn't that it was, hey, overnight, everything just stopped at the same time, or stopped for the foreseeable future. You know, there might have been periods where, hey, this is postponed for a couple of weeks and we're going to reassess and figure out what's going on. But certainly different in terms of myself, as far as like staring at things and seeing my life change. I mean, other than like career changes or shifts in jobs or something, nothing. Yeah. Again, nothing to this level, but there's definitely been career or job shifts, that have happened.
So what is, tell me a little bit about your career. How did you start? How did you end up here? And what do you think led to you being able to kind of manage what's been happening the way that you do?
You know, it's, my career is kind of weird because a lot of people who are in touring or in music management or something like that normally start in a touring world and then kind of more get off the road. I actually started in management and music. I mean, before that, I actually was working for Best Buy when they're rolling out their musical instruments divisions. I had been in bands previously and was friends with a lot of bands. So I was actually setting up in stores for like all my friends' bands when they were first starting to blow up. Like we did Gym Class Heroes and All Time Low. And these were all bands that like I was friends with back in 2007 and 8, 9 before they got to a certain level. So I kind of was sick of that and really wanted to get into the management space. So used some relationships and worked at a management company, worked on a few albums, on some bigger artists, moved companies a couple times, and then was independent on my own. And honestly, touring was this thing that like I would go fill in for international bands that were coming to do Coachella and kind of be their local tour manager. I would fill in for people for a week or two. And realistically, it was just more to get paid, to be able to pay my rent and stuff at the same time. I mean, management was fully commission-based. So it was, hey, I made money this month. I didn't make money in this period. So touring was kind of just a thing initially just to pay my rent. I had a booking agent that booked a couple of my bands that posted on Facebook that they needed someone to fill in for a tour. You know, I kind of threw my hand up. He was like, hey, you'd be great for this. It was going to be filling in for a week. That was with OK Go. And then I ended up staying with them for about a year and a half or so. And just kind of as bands I worked with, as indie bands and baby bands kind of, you know, just imploded or stopped or kind of moved on to different things, or I ended up resigning from a couple of them, I just ended up staying on touring. And the plan was, I'm going to do this for a year, reassess it and figure it out after that. you know, that kind of wrapped up and it was, okay, what am I going to do next? Okay, Go cycles up, and then Run the Jewels kind of came into play, and I ended up talking to them. And this was right when Run the Jewels 2 had just recently come out. Started with them in 2015 in the late spring. And then it kind of evolved in a certain way where I just ended up staying in. Like, Run the Jewels ended for an album cycle, and I ended up doing Mike Snow, and then Run the Jewels, and I'd fill in for other bands. Then Run the Jewels came back, and I kind of ended up just staying with them. And then I got to a certain point again where I was like, okay, I can't be on the road all the time. I have to get off the road to an extent, because I was just seeing that I'd been gone for essentially 3.5 years to an extent, and, you know, not carrying on any sense of realistic life to a point. And at the same time, like, as much as I loved all these bands and everyone else, I was also, you know, a bad word to use is beholden, but I don't want to say beholden to a band, but like, it's whether they're working or not. So, and I can only work on one thing at a time if I'm traveling all the time. So if I can, you know, reposition myself, build out this tour director role, and kind of run it as an independent, I could work with multiple acts at the same time, thus increasing my ability to have some sort of life, my income, and, you know, provide an added benefit to these acts and other acts that maybe I'm out of their budget range, but at the same time, they don't need me on the road. They can have someone else on the road, but they can also, you know, utilize my experience, utilize my connections, my relationships to, you know, really help them scale up and build as they can.
What exactly happened, or, you know, sort of what happened at that three-year mark where you started to realize that maybe there was an imbalance and you needed to figure out a plan to do something about it?
You know, the thing that I will say is I've definitely been thinking about it and getting a little burnt, in certain ways, but the thing that really pushed it over the edge is, you know, as I still credit this person for it, I've told her this in the past and stuff as well. I was in a relationship and it was, going great for a bit and then wasn't for a little while. And then honestly, I ended up getting broken up with, and I at first wanted to, you know, or a thought I was crediting that towards, hey, I just was not there. I was not able to put the time in. I wasn't, you know, it was, you know, my fault. I wasn't able to put in what I needed to put in to that to make it work. I was definitely putting work first. And I kind of realized, you know, at that point, I was very early 30s. And it was, if I want to have any semblance of life, whether it's dating or family life or just really, you know, maintaining good friend relationships, I had to make time for that personal time as well. So that was kind of the thing that kicked me in the butt to say, hey, I need this. I need to separate myself a little bit more time and give myself a break for not only my mental health, but like my personal health as well, just in those friendships and relationships too.
So take me through the journey that you went through when you made the decision that, you know, something needs to change. It's basically an event happened and you know, the world is telling me right now, like, I need to make a change. What is that process like? Because I know, at least from my experience and what I've heard from other people, is that it's kind of tough, right? It's kind of, you're kind of in denial at mm-hmm. first, and then you have to really put a lot of effort into it. So how was that? And then what are the things that you learned from going through that process?
You know, the hardest thing for me at that period was saying no to things, because I was also at a level that I had, you know, built a lot of relationships from my management days that really helped me in touring. And at that point, I had a couple great tours come and ask me if I would be interested in going out with them, or if I was interested in talking to them and even having conversations about doing it. And like, these are a couple of them are major tours. And I had to say no. I was like, I need to take a couple months and like figure out things and really work on, make sure I'm in a good, you know, mental space and able to do it. I've been running nonstop for 3.5-4 years at this point. I have to take a break. That was the hardest thing. What I will say is like the team around me that I had, from my TM assistant at the time, who while I was dealing with a lot of things with picking up some slack on some different elements, I was able to put him forward for one of those tours. He ended up going out and tour managing that. So I helped him on some different levels on that, but it was, at the same point I could start, you know, I kind of helped to realize that you know, with that, I could do more and not necessarily have to be physically present at the same time. But the hardest moment for sure was just, you know, saying no to things. You're looking at it initially and saying, oh, I would make X amount of dollars, or this is the next step in my career at a certain point. So that was definitely the hardest piece. And I will say that there were definitely, that was probably the best decision I made, because it gave me time and space to kind of realize what I needed to do. And at the same time, it opened myself up for other opportunities. You know, right at that time, like after I passed on two different things, with, you know, a month later, I was having conversations with Wolf and Rothstein about doing Childish Gambino stuff. And that happened kind of soon after that, when we started having that talk. And if I had have said yes to one of those other things, I potentially wouldn't have had that conversation, because I didn't have time and I wasn't open to commit myself to do that, because I would just be running. So, you know, sometimes this is the same thing that I've said, like even during this quarantine, like, you know, it's scary, it's difficult. There's a lot of people having challenges with it right now, and it's hard to look on the bright side. I mean, I myself have tons of ups and downs with it. But, you know, there's some belief that you just got to continue to prepare for opportunities and that they're going to somehow present itself. You know, it's one of those things, like in sports, they say, you know, if you stay in shape, you don't have to get in shape. It's kind of the same level. There's a lot that you can't do right now in the music world or the touring world. But, you know, whenever people text me right now and ask me how I'm doing, what I'm up to, I kind of have a stock response that I'm like, I'm just doing everything I can to stay mentally and physically fit. Like literally just trying to build in routine level. And that was kind of that same thing, is like building some sort of routine that, hey, these are what I'm working on, this is what I'm doing, like having some sort of schedule, and just, you know, when you do hit those moments, be able to sit in them and recognize them and not brush them aside, because I feel like that's something that I was doing before I hit that mark of, you know, I was kind of internalizing, or when I'd have moments, I'd just push through it and I'd bury myself in the work. And it kind of culminated in that moment where I said, I have to get off. I have to be done with this. And that moment happened, and I had about a month left on a tour following that. And like, I will definitely say, like, because that those tour members, the band, the crew, everyone were my family, they helped look after me a lot there. They helped, like I said, my TM assistant at the time picked up a ton of slack, and the artist, and it was the end of a cycle, and they definitely recognized, and but we were all so close that they were kind of like, cool, do what you need to do. Everything happened. I got everything done that needed to get done. But at the same time, like, it was great to have that support system there, and then just, you know, take the time I needed to kind of reestablish.
Was your tour family the people that you turned to when you were going through that and you were trying to decide what to do? Or was there someone outside that helped you through it?
You know, it's kind of a mixture. I'd say the tour family is as definitely closest to, for the most part. I mean, I have a couple close friends that I call and I go to whenever I need, you know, to bounce some ideas off, some people who are just outside of it as well. Because just like, you know, your immediate family, your boyfriend, your girlfriend, your husband, your wife, your tour people, when they're in it every day, I mean, they're definitely seeing your side of it, or they're living with it and saying, I'm seeing this, but you don't necessarily notice. You need an outside opinion at times. The people who are inside of it don't always notice to an extent what's going on. So, you know, you need some people that you're close to, but you're not seeing or talking to every single day. So I have a couple of really good friends in different industries who've just been friends for years, just, you know, old school, grew up with them, went to school with them, different levels. And those are some guys that I would, you know, stay with in terms of just keeping up with and talking to and, you know, get their opinion and take their outside perspective. But the guys on tour, or, you know, girls and guys on tour, are people that would definitely be there to support and definitely be those people who say, no, I get it. Yeah, you should take a break, or yeah, this is there, or this is what you need to do. And, you know, I like to think I do that for them as well. Even now during this period, I mean, we all chat at different times, even if it's just a text here or there, or we'll get on the phone and just talk and think, you know, talk through what we're thinking. And at the same time, you know, try and keep everyone from getting too down or at the same time too up. Because I mean, if you look at every flash signal of something and think that like, oh, cool, we're almost out of this, people are booking shows, it's like, okay, well, let's be real about it and let's see what the reality of this is going to be. Because if you allow yourself to get too high at any moment, you're just going to crash back down. So,
yeah, I mean, that's definitely a managing expectations sort of thing, right? And I mean, do you do that a lot in your career, in your job?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that is my job, is managing expectations. Like my job is, as much as I'm a realist and I'm very positive about most things, I think I'm always thinking worst case scenario and preparing for worst case scenario at the same time. Trying to optimize business and look at like how today's decision is not affecting something today or tomorrow, but going to affect something in 3 weeks or a month or whatever it is. You know, I definitely, like everyone else, there are moments that I let my optimism kind of get away from me, or at the same time, my pessimism on certain things. But yes, managing expectations is the big thing. Just to make sure everyone sits in reality to a certain extent. I would rather be that person that even if you don't agree with me on it, you at least understand my reasoning. So, you know, you can never be too mad or upset at the same time. Even if like you don't agree with me on something, if you understand my thought process and reasoning and I understand yours, like, okay, cool, that's fine. We don't have to agree on it. But as long as you understand there's a justification and a reasoning behind it, you can't be mad at it, because then it's just not personal in any way.
Yeah, it definitely nurtures better communication. Mm-hmm. So how does that relate to the way that you conduct your life at home when you're not on tour?
I mean, I'm kind of the same thing. I'm very realistic at the same point. I would say that, you know, it's hard. I'm very still business oriented in how I go about my life and things, which is, you know, pro and con, pro in a lot of ways in terms of like financials and, you know, getting things done and crossing things off lists, but also not great at just like blowing with the wind or going with things, which is, you know, can be troublesome at times with friends or family or relationships or whatever it is, because it's very like, you know, goal oriented to a certain extent and trying to, you know, check things off a list and get things done and get through it. And so, you know, I think that definitely one of the things that I continuously work on in my life, and I'm not great at it, is I definitely at times hold others to my level of expectation for myself at the same time, which is a dangerous situation to get in. Not saying that I'm better than anyone else in any way. It's just, if those don't match with someone else's, they might have different levels of expectation for themselves, not good or bad, but things that they gauge are important to them. And I think we need to recognize that. And I think that as much as I do recognize that at times, it is something that if that does not match with my expectation, then it's easy to get frustrated about that. And I have to remind myself that my expectations are not necessarily other people's expectations. Sit and work on that.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. And I feel like when you're in a leadership role, you do have a lot of responsibility. And a lot of things really do depend on whether you make the correct decision or not. So I can definitely see how that could bleed into your personal life, because you do feel a sense of responsibility just as being part of the relationship. So what are some of the things that you do when you find yourself kind of slipping into the more rigid side of yourself?
You know, I try and sit and kind of take a beat, take a moment, kind of reflect a little bit, try and almost remove myself from the situation. Just take a moment to relax. Sometimes it's go for a run. Sometimes it's just listen to a podcast or some music or something. But, you know, I also, at the same time, because of how I work and everything I do, I mean, I would define myself in work as aggressive. That doesn't mean like, hey, I'm going and trying to fight or something like that, but I'm very aggressive and I'm goal oriented and I'm a go getter and I try and work on everything I can do. And that's the same thing in my personal life. So sometimes, yes, I need to, you know, work off some steam. I need to take a beat from it and just, you know, allow space in that, whatever that may be. So that's kind of my biggest focus that, I kind of try and do.
I love that. So what is something that you've done in the past? You know, has there been any time when you realized, okay, I need to take a break, and then you did something really out of the ordinary for you?
You know, I wouldn't necessarily say anything's really out of the ordinary. I mean, the most out of the ordinary thing is, I mean, trying to disconnect myself from, you know, my cell phone or something for a little bit of time. And I mean, I, you know, that sounds really sad to say, but I mean, I'm pretty typical in a lot of things, so I don't do anything that would be absolutely crazy. But if I, like I said, taking a moment, trying to go somewhere where I maybe don't have cell reception for a hike or for something else, just to, you know, even if I see an email that I get pissed off about and I want to respond to, like, I can't respond to it or something. And just, you know, same thing. I can't make a call. I can't do anything about that. So, you know, I wouldn't say that any of that's necessarily out of the ordinary as far as like a reaction to those moments. But just, you know, just, yeah, trying to take a small step towards like allowing myself to really think about it before reacting. And, you know, I need to get a lot better about that for sure. But, you know, trying my best to be better these days.
Well, that's actually a really good tip, you know, just to get put like a physical barrier between you mm-hmm. and your responsibilities when you really need it. So what are one of those, what's like your favorite place or one of your favorite places to take a minute?
You know, I used to live in LA. I used to live in Marina Del Rey for a while. And I'll still go over to the West Side at times and just kind of go, even if it's in my car or even if it's just whatever, go sit by the bay and just kind of like, you know, try and be present with the water and everything else and just take that for a moment to kind of reflect. That's something that I think, you know, it still kind of grounds me a little bit, just getting out into some sort of nature. You know, being from LA, you know, typically going to some sort of beach setting is something that I feel really refreshing. You know, I don't want to go do it when it's in rush hour, but even just going for a drive is just something that at the same time can be relaxing. It just allows you to concentrate on something else and, you know, just kind of get out of your element. I think, you know, being in LA or being in New York or something like that, it's basically just, you know, concrete jungle or concrete everywhere. Like, you need some space at times. And I think that's the biggest thing right now. I mean, everybody's just on top of each other in quarantine at the same time. And I mean, it's something that, you know, you're seeing it in relationships, friendships, everything else. One of the, you know, a major stressor in this period is just, you know, it's either bringing people closer together or pushing them farther apart. And, you know, I think it's how people are deal with that and, you know, take the time to work on themselves is something that's going to be that's going to positively affect all of us going forward. So finding that space, finding that moment, taking that, you know, taking some time just to, you know, be with yourself is something good. And that's something that I like to try and do as much as possible during this.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely interesting that the hardest thing to do sometimes is to really just sit with yourself and sit in silence.
Yeah. It's funny during all of this. I mean, you saw all the memes when it all first happened in the past couple of months where it's like, you know, the biggest thing what they're asking for you to do for your country is to stay home and watch Netflix. And it's a huge issue for everybody. But at the same time, 3 months ago, people would sit at home and watch Netflix for a week straight without batting an eye. I mean, granted, this is a long time at the same point. But I mean, it's just funny is that like, yeah, same thing. It's like, it's, hey, just hang out at home. Just don't go do something else. And I think that's the hardest thing, like you said, for people to do, because I think when you can't bury those issues with work or family time or whatever else, you know, you see all these things and these things that you also need to work on yourself mentally or whatever else it is to try and, you know, get a little bit better. And I think that's one of the things that hopefully, you know, working from home for a lot of people is adding to stress for a lot of people, but hopefully at the same time, it is also a de-stress on another point.
Well, sometimes being inside your own head and getting to really know yourself can be one of the scariest things, right?
Oh, it's a dangerous place. That's a real dangerous place. Like, I try and stay outside of my head to a certain extent, because like, if I go down certain paths or just rabbit holes, I mean, it's hard to shut that off. You say I'm not going to do that, but you still do it.
Oh yeah, I totally feel that. It's funny because a lot of times we sit around and we're always complaining, you know, at least prior to quarantine, we were kind of just always running around going, we don't have any time. I don't have any time. I wish I had more time, and I wish that I could do more things, and I wish that I could really take some time to myself. And now that we have it, it's like everyone's just clawing and fighting to not have to do it, which I find really interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. It's like, I was having this conversation with someone a couple of weeks ago, and it's like, yes, everybody needs to be worried about, you know, finances and taking care of themselves and everything else. But I said, you know, when this all happened, not from any fault of anyone's, but like, you see that work, everything else was the first thing to kind of shut down to an extent, or people by no fault of their own had to let go of people, reduce wages, do different things on that. And it's things that people have focused all of their energy on for a long period of time. And I think at a certain point, like, there's a realization of, okay, yeah, I also need to work on life outside of work, because if my identity and everything else is my work at the same time, trust me, this is a problem I have as well, is then when the work goes away or reduces, then like, what am I? And you're trying to figure all of that out. So, you know, taking some time to work on those relationships and those friendships and being okay was saying no. I mean, that's one of the biggest fears, like we talked about early on about the touring world, is that like, there is that fear that if you say no to something, you don't know that it's necessarily coming back. That's the thing with the touring world. It's not like, hey, I'm going to go take 6 months off and come right back, or I'm going to take a 2 week vacation and come back. I had someone tell me that a few years ago when they were a front of house guy and they said they were going to go take 6 months and then get on. I'm like, that's cool, but you need to find your job now for 6 months from now. If you come back in 6 months, that gig that you next gig you get is going to be 4 months away from that. So at the same time, you're not really taking 6 months off. You're taking 10 months off if you even get that. There is a level of out of sight, out of mind at the same point. So there's that fear of, you know, if you say no to something, you don't necessarily know when your next gig is at the same point. It's kind of like a trust fall. It's just kind of blind trust and just saying like, all right, cool. Like, I'm going to trust that this works out. And if it doesn't, then I'll figure things out from there. It's just like something that I think a lot of people in the world these days in industry are going to have to an extent, come to realize that like, this is something that is going to change our entire life kind of going forward, on not just work-wise, but also how we deal with things, how we deal with, you know, social activities, you know, how we see people, how we, you know, dine out or do anything else. The landscape is going to be forever changed. And, you know, we're going to have to be able to adapt and change with that. And in that element, I think, take a lot of these pieces into play and realize and try and build, you know, really well-rounded lives and support systems as well for when something does happen. I mean, this is, it's kind of like almost a surprise that it's been, what, over 100 years since a major pandemic or something like that has occurred. I would not be surprised that something else happens much in a much shorter time frame than that going forward. Not necessarily pandemic, but greater, we're obviously seeing like greater things happen, or not greater things, but great events happen every 5 to 10 years in our world these days that are affecting us, whether it was a, you know, 9/11, an economic meltdown, you know, you're seeing now a pandemic, you're seeing different elements, you're seeing landscape change with global warming, you're seeing all these different pieces, and people are going to have to be and continue to be fluid, because the reality of the situation is when one of these things affects the world around you, you can't necessarily count on what you've always counted on. Like, people were working March 16th and March 18th, they were not anymore. And it's kind of like, what do we do now? And like, you kind of saw it from our unemployment system to our government to everything else. Like, we were not set up for this. Like, this is a system that is still like, there are people that are still dealing with trying to get the most basic things sorted, that, you know, still haven't over the past 4 months. You know, it's just something that like, we weren't set up. And I think that's the biggest thing we have to get figured out.
Yeah, totally. I mean, right now it's like, people are still, I mean, even like unemployment's going to end tomorrow, the extra 600. And, mm-hmm. you know, there's people who still haven't even qualified for, their applications haven't even gone through. So yeah, I mean, it's really crazy. But one of the things that you mentioned is, you know, kind of having a more well-rounded life, mm-hmm. so that when the rug gets pulled out from under you, it doesn't completely topple you over.
Yeah.
So from your travels and stuff, have you noticed in other cultures, especially like in Europe, if people tend to prioritize that at all, or how do they deal with things? Because right now it seems like every other country in this world is handling it so much better than we are.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I feel really blessed and lucky. I've done all the traveling that I've done. I mean, I've been, you know, everywhere from China and Japan to Australia and New Zealand and all over Europe. And yeah, there's definitely that element. I feel like a lot of these countries and a lot of different places do really well about, like, you know, working as much as they can, but at the same time, having strong social aspects and social lives to it. At the same point, like, they're very work heavy, but it seems also to an extent that it's not as, this could be completely wrong. I could be completely false on it, but not as cutthroat to a certain level, basically meaning there is more like, hey, we as a whole are going to benefit, you know, as a community, as an industry at the same time, where, you know, in this industry, it's kind of, you know, you'll see a lot of people who are ready to cut other people down for certain gigs at the same time, rather than, hey, sometimes it doesn't just work out. Sometimes it's not the right fit. And I think that's something that you definitely see really well around the world. I mean, you know, again, I say that as a brief observation, meaning I've been to all these places, traveled well, have a lot of friends in these places. But like any touring person, for the most part, you're in these places for such a minuscule amount of time that you're only seeing the top layer of it. So I could be wholly inaccurate in that, but that's kind of my understanding and seeing. And I think at the same time, in these countries, one of those elements is things, you know, completely removing the politics from it for anything of it. There are worries that a lot of these people in other countries don't have. Not saying one system's better than the other, but if you're not having to, hey, I'm not working now, I no longer have health insurance during a pandemic or something, that's something that in a lot of these other countries, people don't have to worry about. That's the same thing as there are different social safety nets as far as these goes. You know, that, again, that's not taking anything in the political aspect into it, but there are different elements of worries that I think allow them and allow people in certain areas to have a different level of social build around it, because like we talked about in the US, and especially with a lot of people around this, if you're not working, you're not making money, you don't have insurance, you don't have these different elements with it. So it's one of those pieces that like you always need to be working to survive and to build on, because for that, you know, even if you make a ton of money, which this is one thing that happened with a lot of people in the touring industry that I know of, is a lot of these people on paper make really good money, but you're making that for maybe 8 to 9 months a year maximum. So I have a lot of friends that didn't qualify and didn't get a stimulus check when those came out, because last year it says that maybe they made like 80K or 90K or something like that. But then they were off work from November until March and were about to start working again. So all that extra money they made, you're really working for 12 to 15 months. Your money in 8 months or so is really going to make you last 12 to 15 months. So it's kind of compounded in that period of time. So, you know, even some of those social safety nets, they weren't able to receive, you know, same thing when it came to like, you know, the PUA support for unemployment. Like they received one job, they received W-2, and then everything else was 1099. But because they'd had that one W-2 job, they had to get standard unemployment, which was for them at that point, because it was such a minuscule amount of money, was not beneficial at all for that. So, you know, it's a weird industry in which you're always trying to worry about a lot of external factors as well. And I guess that's a long way just to get back to your question. But I mean, with some of these other countries, I think that, and crew members from those other countries, there is at least that safety net that when something happens, they do have a couple things they don't have to worry about. So that does not further compound into, their stressors as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like Maslow's hierarchy, right? Of needs. Yeah. If you don't have your basic needs met, it's really hard to really focus on anything at the higher levels. So it's hard to really think in a group sense and to really care about your neighbors and worry about how the group is doing as a whole when you're barely trying to survive on your own.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, if you can't there's no such thing as upward or social mobility if you can't meet the most basic of necessities, or every penny you have is just trying to meet those necessities. I mean, upward mobility is based on, you know, you earning or making enough income to be able to take yourself to the next level, provide for yourself in a way that, you know, your parents or your predecessors or whoever it is, to try and exceed what they were able to get. That was and is, has always been the American dream. But if, you know, if you're just struggling to scrape by, you know, it's not as easy as just, hey, go do something else or go to find something new. You know, you look at it, I mean, there's tons of people looking for something new right now. There's tons of work, but if you can't meet the basic needs and every penny you have is going to that, it's impossible to save for, you know, what they want you to do, save for 6 months, save for a rainy day, save to be able to protect that if you have to, you know, use everything you can just to meet your basic necessities.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I completely feel that. And it's kind of shocking that we live in a society where there's so many different systems going around. I mean, the way that the music industry works is so different from the way that the tech companies work, is so different from the way that the public sector works, you know, with schools and things. And it's almost like our society just wants to have like a single fix for everything, just like a one size fits all approach to everything. But there's so many different factors. And I've noticed, especially in industries like the music industry, that because you don't really have a uniting factor, you know, there's not a group that is going to, I guess, to govern, you don't have a group of lobbyists that are lobbying for you to make sure that you guys fit into the picture. I feel like it's easy for the industry as a whole to just kind of get left behind and nobody really thinks about it. Have you thought about any of that? And I know that they're talking about, there are some people who have been advocating for some sort of help through the pandemic. Have you heard anything about that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's a couple things. I think that there's, you know, there's this American ideal of, you know, pulling yourself up by your bootstraps, or at the same time, you know, not just looking for a handout or something. And the reality of the situation is, you know, we're so quick to tear each other down in any aspect of it. And when people do get different things, I mean, you know, I'll get back to the lobbying in a second. I mean, because yeah, of course, NIDA and like the Save Our Stages Act, those are all so important right now, because if those go away, if we lose independent venues, if we lose venues, the amount of people that are out of work on that is absolutely insane, not just for the venues, but for the actual communities. I mean, when you look at it, when you look at an arena tour that has maybe 80, 100 people on that tour, you're talking about 200 hotel rooms multiple nights a week in all of these different cities where tours on. That's sometimes, you know, or that's, you know, 100 hotel rooms for two nights or something is 200 hotel rooms. You know, that at the end of the day is so much money into the economy. Those people spending on lunch and dinner, and at the same point, those everyone in those different industries stuff as well. If those venues go away and people aren't playing shows at those places and people can't tour, it's going to negatively affect those communities, which in turn is blowing up that unemployment rate and just continuing to, you know, take down any sort of progress. You know, as I was talking about though, people who just want to tear each other down when they do anything, you know, you saw a list a couple weeks ago when it came out about, you know, certain artists that got PPP loans and stuff as far as that goes. And everyone wanted to jump on it and be like, oh, this artist got that, this artist got this, this artist got that. And I saw people that would post things at, kind of ignorantly and say, well, if they used it to pay for their crew, then that's cool. But if not, that's really kind of fucked up. And I'm like, you're assuming guilt before you're assuming anything else. And because of that, I also know a couple of artists that ended up not applying for PPP loans because they were afraid of that backlash. They were afraid of the negative connotation. And you know who that hurt? That hurt the crew, because the crew didn't get paid because the artist couldn't apply, or didn't apply for it, because they were afraid of the negative backlash that the community would have if it said X artist who supposedly makes so much money is getting a PPP loan. And it's like, yeah, but these are individualized businesses at the same time. Like if an artist gets it, like it's kind of, you can't expect certain artists, like I know artists that had put out $2 million to build tour stuff for this year and the tour was gone. They lost that money. You know, it's something that they ended up getting screwed on at that point, and they feel this pressure and responsibility to take care of the crew. But at the same point, you can't expect someone to just pay out of their pocket just because if us as a country is not really willing to help people meet their basic needs. So my thing and comment to people when they were kind of posting about that and slamming people was, okay, wait and see what happens. If it shows that it's not forgiven because they didn't pay the necessary thing to payroll, then you can go slam them. But I also know people on payrolls from those bands who are getting paid, who got paid for a period of time because the bands took advantage, and I use advantage and just like took the opportunity to take that and take care of their crew members. So those crew members could meet basic needs. And I think people that were slamming for that was really hard. When you look at like all kinds of other industries that definitely seem like they took advantage of it, like, why are we calling out people that are, you know, taking it to try and help what they can, even if it's only for 5, 6, 7, 8 weeks? You know, I just think that, like you said, or like we talked about, is if we are actively trying to look for opportunities to tear someone down rather than extend a hand and reach out to them and allow them to, you know, get that next step. That's why we're in this situation even now, not just because of the pandemic, but even looking across the board with, you know, all kinds of social injustice and everything else around it, is if you don't reach out and allow people to succeed and then say, oh, well, you just didn't work hard enough or you didn't get there. I mean, that's a bad place to be in. And I think that's a negative reflection on like what we can do as people. That's not saying that like someone who is not qualified or an act or anyone else should be given preference just because, but if an act is qualified for something or a person is qualified for a position or anything it is, I think it's our responsibility, especially as anyone with influence or anyone with ability or anyone that can do it, to, you know, try and provide that, because, you know, it's definitely an industry where like rising tides raise all ships. You know, it's blue seas. It's ways for everybody to succeed in this. And it's just finding that opportunity and, you know, allowing people to do that. You can't do it yourself by knocking everyone else down. It's not something that's just going to, you know, ensure your success over everyone else's. Because if everyone else isn't having success either, there's only so much bandwidth that you yourself can do.
Yeah, I mean, and you're absolutely right about all that. It's like, you know, we've kind of been put in a situation in lots of ways. I mean, you guys in that particular example that you just gave, but, you know, we're not looking at the right people to be angry at. We're angry with each other because we think that our neighbors are the reason that we're not doing as well as we could. You know, I'm a high school teacher, and the parents are angry with the teachers because we don't want to go die in the schools, you know, but it's like, at the end of the day, it's like, you know, we need to take a step back and realize, you know, our neighbor is not the enemy. We're all in this together. We all have the same goals. And it's really about advocating for more fair policy and more fair equity in this country. And I think, you know, I think just being open and honest about it and not leaning on the side of blame, I think is a really great first step.
Absolutely. I mean, I think the biggest scam in the world, this is the entire world. This isn't America. This is everywhere. The biggest scam in the world in business and in politics is, you know, I'll say the rich, but the rich also means influential or powerful or whatever it is, you know, convincing the proletariat that they're enemy is each other. I mean, the reality of the situation is you have people, and as long as there's one person below you to an extent, you kind of don't think your life is that bad. It's kind of like, well, I'm a step above them, so no, I'm not that bad. And it's like, well, no, like we can still all benefit. We can still all grow, you know, and that doesn't necessarily even mean that's not, you know, my beliefs in one way or the other outside of it. That's not to necessarily say like, oh, we need to increase taxes or do this or do that to help everyone. It's like, yo, but just being good people and just like figuring things out and creating opportunity and saying like, hey, this is something that I can, what can I help you with? How can I help you grow? And not expecting necessarily, you know, things in return. I think that's something that like, as a society, we can get there. And instead, like, you know, we just keep all of our, you know, figurative guns pointed at each other. And that's the same thing as far as the touring industry. It's about, you know, trying to, your eyes are bigger than your stomach at times. It's about taking more than you can handle, taking every offer, every guarantee, or taking every, you know, job that you can, and, you know, not providing the right opportunity or the right, you know, mentorship to allow someone to come, you know, under you and support you. I mean, to circle back to my, like I said, when I had that moment in my life and a moment that I needed to recuse myself for a moment, I was really blessed and lucky to have my TM assistant that like had worked with me for the past 2.5 years together, that literally he just started taking things off my plate. And then when an opportunity came up for him to go out and succeed on his own, he was able to go. He knew that he had me at a call if he needed anything from it. And, you know, he didn't. And he's done great, and he's continued to grow. And it's just that opportunity for him to succeed is there. And then at the same point, I've been able to bring other people in because now he's off succeeding. And I think that's something that, you know, we as a society can continue to do, because there's also a level that, you know, when it comes to touring, that you don't want to say is below you, but once you get to a certain thing, like same thing, if you're a teacher or anything else, if you're making 60, 80, 100, whatever it is, whatever your income is, you don't want to take the $25,000 a year job. Like, you're not going backwards as far as that goes. That could be if you're an engineer, you're a teacher, you're whatever. And that's the same thing. Like, if your rate is $3,500 a week, you don't want to go take the $1,700 a week job. But if you can help build someone who maybe doesn't have that experience and get them into that role, that's kind of the same thing. Like when I brought in Jonathan Berlew on stuff, is Jonathan came in, and Jonathan's first run, literally, we had a conversation where I was like, yo, I cannot pay you anything reasonable on this, but this is an opportunity. He came in and did it for like 2 weeks. And then we took a break on something. He got a little bit of a raise after that. And literally by the end of that run, even like 6 months in, he was not making incredible money, but he took that and built upon it and took a lot of different tours and is now crushing it. He's out with Primus and a bunch of other people. And he's someone that, like, you know, took that opportunity to grow. And, you know, whether it was me, and then he went on, got an opportunity with Alex, who toured with the neighborhood and stuff as well, he just continued to get different opportunities. And I think finding those is something that's on everyone. And especially, I've had conversations with like
Brian Marquis, who tour manages Billie Eilish, and Henry, who tour manages Tyler, Creator, and Brian Cross, who oversees all the touring for Monotone, which is, you know, Jack White and LCD Sound System and Vampire Weekend. And we've all kind of talked about this and said, like, you know, coming out of this, this is an opportunity for all of us to, you know, continue to be an outstretched hand to grow the business and, you know, grow opportunity for people. And at the same time, we need to understand that, yes, it's going to change the financial and fiscal outlook on things for artists. It's going to change for crew to a certain level. I mean, at the same time, if artists are taking big financial hits, we can't expect that things are not going to change for crew. But at the same time, it's our job to work with the artists and everyone else to continue to protect crew as much as we can, continuing to grow it. And, you know, at the right opportunity, make the right pushes where we can that benefit the artist at the end of the day, because sometimes it is something that, like, yeah, you spend a couple more dollars and it makes things a lot easier. It's like, you know, something I learned early on in touring, and I was, you know, something I would do a lot is I would try and save a dollar and I would do 90 cents of work to do it. And at the same time, it's like, how much is that adding to stress and chaos and, you know, not benefiting the whole, because it's also taking away from different things. So I think coming out of this, we've all, you know, everyone's continued to talk, everyone's just checking up on each other. And, you know, we all know, and artists know, and the entire industry, Live Nation, AEG, agents, lawyers, everyone knows that it's this community that's going to help continue to grow this and take it out of it and, like, you know, allow it to be successful. No one's sitting here asking and saying, hey, the government needs to, you know, make this perfect again. It's basically like, don't let this crumble. That's the big thing. Like, we, you know, because at the same time, if these independent stages go away, if these, you know, all these crews and these communities get destroyed, there's just not going to be opportunity. There's not going to be room. It's only going to be detrimental to the entire economy and landscape of not only the industry, but also the country, to a point where there are major companies that rely on this. There are major people that rely on it. There's major regions that rely on it. And if you suddenly remove all those pieces from it, you know, we are, you know, without looking at facts, I'm pretty sure that we're the largest, you know, live entertainment landscape in the world when it comes to it, as far as the US. So if that goes away, it's not only going to affect us and our landscape, it's going to affect the European landscape, because those, you know, there's not markets here for them to come tour, the Australian landscape. I mean, it is a worldwide economy, and we have to look out for each other at this point.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's definitely, you know, give it a fighting chance by doing everything you can to help it keep going. So what is something that, we're almost out of time, so what is something that you would like to share with your fellow touring professionals about that they can do to kind of help the situation? Do you think that there are ways to advocate for ways to help?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the biggest thing you're seeing a lot online is just continue to contact, you know, immediately and continuously your representatives, continue to talk to each other, you know, kind of look out for your friends, look out for people that you think are also, you know, staying strong or don't need it. Sometimes they just, you know, even if they don't admit to it, sometimes just hearing from someone asking how they're doing is something that's super beneficial. I think that, you know, going back to stages, support it, do everything you can, write your representatives, continue to post photos and hashtags, and just keep the conversation there. Because like you said, the problem is, it's not that necessarily that everyone's ignoring it at the same time. It's just, there's a lot of industries that are hurting. So you need to continue to make sure that this voice is getting heard at the same time. You know, don't just sit back and say, oh, well, what difference can I make? Because, you know, realistically, as one, it's not that you're going to make a lot of difference, but you're just going to continue to amplify that. And I think that's, you know, that's something that you can do to support your industry. At the same time, get your family to support it by posting things, get your friends, even if they're not part of it, just continue to get the conversation going. I mean, we all grew up in these venues, we all grew up in, you know, with these agencies, in this industry. I mean, realistically, as agencies go under, artists don't have booking agents or anything else with it. I mean, we need to support each other, and we need everyone here doing it, and we need their family, their friends, we need Congress, we need everyone just to be a part of it in any way that they can.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Christian. I think this was a really great conversation that I actually haven't had on the podcast.
I think it went in a different direction than we planned.
It did. I mean, you know, but I think it's good. Like you said, it's very, you have to keep the conversation open and you have to let it go where it goes, because that's the only way that we can actually make some change happen. So.
Awesome. Well, thank you.
All right. Thank you. Bye. Here are some key takeaways from my conversation with Christian Coffey. 1. When you're feeling out of balance and burned out, do your best to really listen to others you care about when they offer their perspective. It often takes someone outside of yourself to help you see your issues for what they truly are. Make it a priority to reach out for help when you're feeling stuck, and don't forget to pay it forward. 2. Give yourself a break and learn how to say no. The fear of missing out is real, but life will align for the best when you take the time to put your mental and emotional health first. 3. While it's good to slow down, do everything you can to stay mentally and physically fit. Have a schedule and goals. Balance is found on purpose, not by accident. 4. In disagreements, don't be afraid to share where you're coming from. That's the only way the other person will understand your perspective. You don't have to agree, but each party needs to be open to understanding the reasoning behind the decisions that are being made. And 5. Take a step back when you find yourself becoming too rigid. It's important to reflect when you feel yourself continually gaining too much speed. At that point, let yourself disconnect. And don't hesitate to place some physical barriers between you and your pain point. Thank you so much for joining us on the Tour Life podcast. Please go to saveourstages.com to send an automated letter and tweet to your representatives asking them to support the Restart Act. Our independent music venues are counting on you. Be sure to give Christian a follow on Instagram at Christian_Coffey. And don't forget to like, subscribe, leave a review on iTunes, and to follow The Tour Life on Instagram at The Tour Life Podcast.